Dorothy Daniels isn't your typical serial killer. She's a celebrated food critic with exquisite taste, voracious sexual appetite, and zero moral compass. In the dimly lit Nomad hotel bar in Manhattan, she sips a Corpse Reviver Hash 2 while contemplating her extraordinary journey from culinary expert to cannibalistic murderer. Her story has captivated true crime enthusiasts and literary circles alike, bridging high literary style with pulp sensibilities while exploring female rage and appetite with unflinching candor. What drives someone with such refined taste to commit such savage acts? Perhaps the answer lies in understanding that for Dorothy, consumption has always been an art form, whether she's savoring a perfectly prepared souffle or the flesh of her former lovers. Dorothy's culinary education began in her Connecticut childhood home, where her French-obsessed mother crafted everything by hand. Unlike peers raised on TV dinners in the 1960s, Dorothy ate meals of fresh herbs, aged cheeses, and ripened vegetables. Her mother, perpetually wearing Dior Rouge 999 lipstick and crisp linen aprons, taught her that makeup was what a woman wears instead of armor, and to excel so the bastards won't ever get you down. Dorothy's adolescent rebellion manifested as junk food, a rejection of her mother's sophistication. In fluorescent-lit fast food joints, she practiced femininity while devouring processed cheese and artificial flavors. This created a strange cycle. Junk food was rebellion, rebellion was femininity, and femininity was junk. She lost her virginity to a fry cook whose spatula dance captivated her. Their encounter in his smoke-scented Impala became a sensory memory, a Proustian Madeleine of forbidden pleasure. At Penistone College, Dorothy evolved into the perfect predator. By graduation in 1984, she'd acquired practical skills, passable Italian, cooking, sexual techniques, writing, and most crucially, the ability to investigate, seduce, and discard men elegantly. Information became my protection. Condoms fail, pepper spray can be turned against you, but information almost never does. Dorothy's big break came in 1990s New York during print media's heyday. After describing a dish as a 15-year-old boy's fantasy of cunnilingus, she landed a food critic position at Andrew Gotian's new magazine, Noir. They sealed the deal with a squelchy fuck, launching a career that fit her like slipping into a bespoke garment. Our language around desire is inherently cannibalistic. We devour books and consume media. For Dorothy, this metaphorical consumption eventually became literal. Her first kill occurred during a truffle hunting trip in Italy. After arguing with her occasional lover, Giovanni, Gandhi thin with fantastic hair but a niggardly nature, their Fiat hit a pothole. When he inspected the damage, Dorothy confused the pedals, sending him spinning into a guardrail. Instead of seeking help, she harvested Giovanni's liver with her wine key, later cooking it in his own pan and finding it delectable. This accidental kill awakened something primal. Human flesh wasn't like pork or veal, but reminded her of bear meat, simultaneously dense and ethereal, combining lamb sensuality, wild game's poignancy, and pork's innocence. By eating people, she tasted forbidden immortality, transcending boundaries to become something godlike. Despite her psychopathic tendencies, Dorothy experienced genuine love once. In spring 2004, she literally fell into Alex Connings, a former college acquaintance turned structural engineer who designed foundations for skyscrapers. Their relationship evolved naturally, and Dorothy experienced love's physical symptoms for the first time, counting minutes until seeing him, wanting to be absorbed into his body. "He resonated in my bones, split my heart, and made it grow," she recalls. "He made me believe I might have a soul." Dorothy realized she loved him while shopping and spontaneously buying egg cuddlers because Alex loves coddled eggs. This simple $10 purchase revealed her love, as she'd never before indulged in such everyday generosity. After nearly 3 years together, Alex proposed at the Empire State Building. Looking into his kind eyes, Dorothy imagined their future, decades together, growing old, being the kinder self she was with him. the self with a conscience. Her stomach lurched at this vision. "No," she said, "I'm sorry, but I can't." Dorothy categorized her cannibalism into two forms, survival and symbolism. In survival situations, even vegans might consume human flesh as instinct overrides morals. The second, cannibalistic essentialism, involves eating human flesh to absorb essential qualities like strength or honor. After losing her job in the 2008 recession and battling depression, Dorothy reinvented herself as a freelance food writer. During this transition, she executed her most calculated murder, her former lover, Andrew Gottian. She drugged his dinner with Xanax and Ambien, disabled his carbon monoxide detectors, and extinguished his pilot lights. The next day, she harvested thick slices from his buttocks after he died from the poisonous gas. She prepared the meat with wine, herbs, and garlic, describing it as chewy but delicious, with an earthy, truffle-like base note enhanced by nostalgia's piquancy. By scattering evidence across Manhattan and having killed multiple people, Dorothy met the FBI's definition of a serial killer. Isn't it fascinating how thin the line can be between appreciation and consumption, between loving something and wanting to possess it entirely? Dorothy's downfall began with Casimir, destroyer of peace, a chance encounter at the Nomad Hotel bar. Unlike her carefully stocked previous victims, he triggered a primal killing impulse born from pure antipathy. She arranged their weekend at a secluded Fire Island house with meticulous care. After preparing duck confit with fresh herbs and opening expensive Brunello di Montalcino, Dorothy plunged an ice pick into his throat in a perfect arc. Blood pulsed from the wound as she struck again, the second thrust finding his eye socket. The third blow slipped between his ribs with precision, reaching his heart. 6 weeks later, Detective Keandra Wasserman appeared at Dorothy's door, sharp-eyed and immediately suspicious. The prosecution's breakthrough came unexpectedly, a perfectly preserved Ottomanelli's receipt found in a partially melted trash can at the fire scene, connecting Dorothy directly to the duck from Casimir's final meal. At Bedford Hills Maximum Security Prison, Dorothy lives by rigid schedules while consumed by food cravings. The bland prison meals contrast sharply with her vivid memories of gourmet experiences. Ghost food wafts in crystalline recollection, a perfect Manhattan, a glistening oyster, warm chocolate chip cookies, making my mouth wet as my cunt once did. Working in the prison library, Dorothy writes her memoir and behaves strategically to maintain this privilege. She marks time through memories of simple pleasures, sun-warmed tomatoes, fresh bread, chicken skin, berries with cream. In therapy, she fixates on Emma's betrayal rather than forgiveness. Unrepentant, she embodies female antisocial personality disorder, the bronze copper of psychopaths, rare and endangered. Dorothy proves monsters can write beautiful prose, love intensely, if briefly, and kill with precision. Her story reveals insatiable desire for food, sex, experience, and power. Through her extreme case, we confront our own appetites, both acceptable and repressed. Perhaps what disturbs us most isn't Dorothy's difference from us, but her similarity,